Their Winter Olympics start in a week, and while there will be excitement in many parts of the world, there's a feeling that may be unique to one town. That would be Norwich, Vermont, which has put a resident into every Winter Games but one since 1984. That's a big feat for such a small town. Karen Krause went there to cover the place and the people for the book Norwich, One Tiny Vermont Town's Secret to Happiness and Excellence. Karen Krause is a sports writer at the New York Times, where she joined the staff in 2005. She's a graduate of athletic powerhouse, the University of Southern California. Norwich is her first book. Karen Krause, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I hope your listeners in the Pacific Northwest won't hold my college allegiance against me.
It's been a while. I think they'll overlook that. As long as there's beaver and duck success in years ahead.
Support the Pac-12, right?
Right, that's, of course. Yeah, that's it. So I understand it was while you were covering the Sochi games that you hit on Norwich.
I did. So I was in Sochi, and, you know, I love the Olympics. It's why I got interested in sports. I was a swimmer growing up, so it was my entree into the sports world. I loved the human stories to be told, but the Sochi Olympics was a difficult one for me because it was hard not to be disillusioned when you saw that $51 billion was being spent for what was basically a Putin world stage event, you know, and we were all just performers in his show. You had the feeling that the minute you left the games, all of these facilities would become very expensive white elephants. You could also sense the military buildup that was occurring on his border. So there were so many reasons where it just felt as if the Olympic ideal that drew me into sports and changed my life had become so corrupted it was almost broke. So in that environment comes this reader email out of the blue telling me, hey, I see you're at the Olympics. You really ought to check out this Olympic skier, Hannah Carney. She's from this town in Vermont that has become an Olympic pipeline. It has put a lot of people on Olympic teams, and I bet there's a story there. And so when I got back from Sochi, I was super intrigued, and I did some cursory reporting and realized, yeah, this is a town that has put 11 people on Olympic teams, so I want to go and see what it's all about. And what I found, it was crazy. I thought I was setting out to write an Olympic book or a sports book, and I ended up with a parenting guide. And in reporting this, I just had so much of my value system and how I see sports affirm, because by and by the parents in this town really seem to have sports in the right perspective.
Let's come back to just some of the basic numbers here. I mean, we're talking about 11 people on Olympic teams in Winter Olympics, all but one since 1984.
Right.
Statistically, how close to impossible for one little town to produce so many Olympians?
It's sort of like out of every 322 residents is an Olympian,
wow.
Which when you think about it is a probabilities puzzle for any of the students at Dartmouth College. And your listeners might be thrilled to know that they include someone with local ties. Andrew Weeding is one of two summer Olympians that this town has produced. And, of course, he was a star at the University of Oregon, where he made his first Olympic team in the 800 meters in 2008, less than 3 years after running his very first track event. So for all of those parents who feel compelled to get their child into a sport early and have that child specialize, the better to get those 10,000 hours needed to master the sport and become really good at it. There is the story of Andrew Weeding as the antithesis of that approach. Starts track his senior year in high school, is on the Olympic team after his sophomore year in college.
So you mentioned this became a book about parenting. So that's the big clue to what the secret to success is in Norwich. But you had to go through some weeding out, I'm sure. I mean, did you go looking for a huge training center or a steroid factory nearby or something?
The closest thing I came to a training center was King Arthur Flour, the bakery, which kind of warmed my heart. That's the kind of training I like to do now. But no, seriously, it does benefit by from its proximity to Dartmouth College. It is a couple miles from Dartmouth across the Connecticut River, and so it has access to the facilities that the college has and also to its expert coaching and the athletes who compete there. Dartmouth is sending actually a pretty sizable contingent to the games next month, or this month actually, now that we're in February. So they the town definitely benefits from that in tangible ways in terms of facilities, access to good coaching, but also in intangible ways. You see all of these great athletes. You can go and watch them compete locally, and it is very inspiring. So that's definitely a piece of it. But the bigger piece that I found, and again, I'm not suggesting there aren't helicopter parents, or this new term that I've just discovered, snowshoe parents, where they actually plow any obstacle in their children's path so that they have clear sailing to success, which I cannot tell you how damaging that is to children, since failure is a rung on the ladder to success, as I found out only too well in my athletic career. But they really look at sports as part of the larger piece of a child's development. So rather than really stress developing championships, they're just as interested in their children developing relationships. And I don't mean just relationships with their fellow athletes and their coaches, but relationships with the community in which they reside, relationships with sport in general and physical activity, relationship with nature, connecting to nature.
So a lot of healthy relationships all across the board. We'll pick it up on the other side of a break. Karen Krause's book is called Norwich. We'll come back and learn more about Norwich, Vermont and all of its Olympians when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking with Karen Krause at the New York Times, who works in the sports pages, about a book that she put out that ended up being labeled in the social science section. It's about Norwich, Vermont. Town population 3,414 as of the 2010 census has put 11 people on U.S. Olympic teams, which seems nearly impossible. So she went up there to find out what was in the water or what was in the steroid factory nearby or something. There isn't one. I'm joking. But you can join the conversation on the exchange as we explore with Karen the amazing success of Norwich. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you're talking about the relationships that children in Norwich are encouraged to form. And not just about their sport. You talked about Andrew Weeding, who got to the U of O and was setting records in the 800 meters, 3 years after he took up his first track meet?
Yes. And here's the thing. So Andrew was a basketball player and soccer player into high school, and he really loved soccer the most. And during his junior season, the soccer coach said, Andrew, I've noticed that, you know, I love having you on the team, don't get me wrong, but I've noticed that you really excel in these timed miles that I have you guys do. You're lapping everybody else. So I have a suggestion for you. Why don't you just this fall try cross country and see how you like it? And so Andrew did try cross country, and he said that in retrospect, he could see that the signs had been there long before this, that maybe running was his future. He would do the local turkey trots as a grade schooler with, you know, other kids and his family in the community, and he would do really well in them. But because his parents were just content to let him do what he liked, they never looked at how well he was doing in these turkey trots and said, hey, Andrew, I think you're a great runner. You need to run. They just let him figure it out. And so it took this coach sort of saying, hey, prodding him a little and saying, why don't you try this cross-country thing for and see how you like it? So he does run cross-country and does quite well. So then his senior year, he adds track, and his high school did not even have a physical track, so he had to go to Dartmouth and work out. And it just so happened that there was in a neighboring town, Nike full-time employee number one, Jeff Johnson, who is a character and could be the subject of a book himself. But he had a connection with someone at Andrews High School, and so this person reached out to Jeff and said, "We have this kid, he's really raw in running, but we think he might have some talent. Would you take a look at him?" And Jeff was blown away by what he saw that first meeting with Andrew, and so he started working with Andrew. And it was only because of the serendipitous connection that the person at Andrews High School had with Jeff and that Jeff had with basically everyone in track, including Vin Lanana at Oregon, that he made a phone call to Vin and said, "I have a young man, he's not very experienced in track, but I'm telling you, I see something in him. You really ought to give him a look." And that's how Andrew wound up at Oregon. And then the rest is sort of a fairy tale. He did really well in 2008, his sophomore season, and qualified for the Olympic trials. Did not even know what the qualifying time was for the Olympic trials. I mean, this was not a goal he had, you know, on his bathroom mirror and looking at every day and saying 10 mantras that I can do this, I can do this. It was just like he competed at NCAAs, and when he got through, he was told, "Oh, congratulations, you qualified for the Olympic trials." To that point, he told me he had been planning, of course, to attend Olympic trials since they were at Eugene, but he was going to be part of the volunteer crew. So he goes from volunteer to participant and then makes the Olympic team in the 800 meters with a second place finish. And the story just gets lovelier and lovelier. So his parents go to the Olympic trials to watch him, and they're wearing shirts that identify them as, you know, Andrew's mom, Andrew's sister, Weeding's mom. I forget what they said. And so someone comes by them and says, "Go KUA," KUA being Andrew's High School, Kimball Union Academy, a very small school. So, you know, they were sort of amazed that this person knew what KUA was, much less knew who Andrew was. And so they had no idea who this person was. So they asked someone after this woman passed them by, like, "Who was that?" Only to be told it was Joan Benoit Samuelson, who knew someone. I think it was her husband had gone to KUA. So,
and she's the Olympic marathoner. Yeah.
Yeah. This, I mean, you know, one of the seminal figures in the sport, and it, you know, they had no idea who she was. So their learning curve, what I'm suggesting with this story, hoping that your listeners take from it, is that they were not super involved parents who were just, you know, not only immersing themselves in the sport that their son ended up in, but really like becoming experts to the point where they were so invested they were de facto coaches. That was not the experience that Andrew had with his parents. And so he ended up making two Olympic teams. He went to 2012 in the 1500 meters. And he told me something which has stuck with me ever since. And I've actually asked athletes that I've interviewed for stories in the New York Times about it, because I felt like it was so, it gets to the core of athletics and what your value system and motivations are. He told me there are two kinds of athletes. There are 10-point athletes and there are 1-point athletes. And Andrew and the athletes of Norwich in general are 10-point athletes. They thrive in a communitarian setting, in an environment where it's very team-oriented, that the success of one person is seen as the success of everybody, that your success inspires and elevates the performance of everybody. And so, of course, that's what Andrew enjoyed growing up and then at the University of Oregon. 1-point players are people who, as long as they win, they don't care what happens with anyone else. In fact, they might even root against everyone else because everyone else's failure is their success. So what Andrew found is at Oregon. He was around other 10-point players, and he thrived. So then he gets out of college, and all of a sudden he turns pro, and now he's a 1-point player, because as a pro, you really only should care about yourself. It's a very selfish endeavor at that point. The day revolves around your training and your sport, and the people in your orbit are there to help you reach your goals. And Andrew, after 2012, found that this was an increasingly difficult environment for him, because he felt like even if he was having a bad workout, there weren't people who were going to say, "Hey, Andrew, I noticed that you're doing this or doing that." People weren't willing to help necessarily, because these were some of his main competitors, and not only were they not helpful, they might have even been sort of taking the measure of his struggles and thinking, "Oh, well, Andrew's struggling, that's one less person I'm going to have to worry about at the next meet." So what he ended up doing, he felt like, "I just have to get this community piece of it back for me to be successful, because that is what inspires me." He ended up becoming a big brother in the years leading to the 2016 track trials, so that even though he wasn't getting this communitarian spirit on the track, he could feel a part of something bigger than himself off the track. And I found that with not just Andrew, but with the other Olympians from Norwich, this was the piece of it. They weren't content to simply be successful themselves. They really wanted to see others succeed. They wanted those around them to also do well. And it sounds simple, but it's really becoming more and more rare in what has become in sports a zero-sum game. For you to succeed, or for me to succeed, you must fail. And people are looking at their opponents not as people with whom you can test yourself and then be best of friends afterward, but as obstacles in the path of your own success.
Enemies, in a sense. Yeah,
exactly.
Karen Krause is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, sports writer for the New York Times. She went to do a sports book and ended up with a social science book. It's called Norwich, One Tiny Vermont Town's Secret to Happiness and Excellence. Norwich has sent 11 people to the Olympic Games. So you were writing in the book because obviously it's not just Andrew Weeding, but the first rec league soccer game that you saw there, you got a real sense right from the get-go.
I sure did, and it has to be pointed out that the rec league in Norwich is no cut. So everyone who wants to participate, there is a place for them. And I didn't really appreciate how rare that is, but as I started telling my friends in other parts of the country about this town, that was the piece that amazed them, because I guess because of financial considerations and other considerations, no-cut rec leagues are becoming rare and rare. So I was at a fourth grade soccer game, and I was talking to two parents whose son, as we were speaking, just happened to score two quick goals, after which the coach said, "Hey, you know, Joey, come on over to the sidelines and catch your breath." And I sort of looked at the parents expecting some outburst, like, "How dare you take my child out?" And they just were very blasé about it. They didn't even blink. They continued with their conversation, because this is the norm. Everybody, okay, their kid got his goals. Now give someone else a chance to shine. It is just really not about, you know, you're keeping my child from setting his personal best and goals scored, you know, or it's not about crushing the opponent. It's about having this experience where everyone feels a part of something bigger than themselves. And I'm not saying they're dilettantes or that they value participation where everyone gets a ribbon. If you read the book, you'll see that these athletes are as tightly wired for success as anyone you'll meet, but they have been raised through deed and example of the elders among them to value the competitive piece, but also the community piece. And so they're able to compartmentalize the competition from the community aspect.
I'm struck, too, by the idea that not only is there the no-cut idea, but, you know, it's reinforced in a couple of other ways by different people in the community, but the idea that you don't just put the best kids in a group by themselves.
Right. And there was one of the Olympians, Felix McGrath, who was a four-sport varsity athlete through high school. And this is, again, a thread that ran through the Olympians where they do change sports with the seasons. Even Hannah, again, she participated in the 2006, 10, and 14 Olympics and came away
Hannah
with
Carney,
medals.
Yeah.
Hannah Carney, she participated in soccer and track in high school. So they are not people who are specializing, but they really do value this this idea that it doesn't have to be super intense and competitive at a young age. So Felix, who was an alpine skier, he moved to Norway. He married a woman from Norway and moved there. And so he is now coaching, and he said he has basically taken the Norwich way and is trying to root it in his club in Norway. So what he does is, instead of grouping his age groupers by their competence or their expertise, he groups them by age group. And that might sound like what does it matter, but he said what he notices on teams where kids, and we're talking about 8 to 13, are grouped by their ability level, you get all of the best in one group, and rather than being a positive environment, it can become a very negative environment where they're all trying to beat one another, which can be great if you can keep it in perspective, but it sometimes spills over into their in their interactions away from the race course. And so he has found that if you have people of the same ability, you may have 9-year-olds being put in with 13-year-olds, and there's a social interaction piece that is missing. That 8-year-old or 9-year-old or 10-year-old feels out of place with 11, 12, and 13-year-olds, even though maybe he or she can compete with them. There's a social piece of it that is either intimidating or doesn't readily it doesn't make it easy for them to develop friendships. So Felix has all of his kids at that age. They're grouped with by age. So what that does is puts some of the better athletes in with some of the athletes who aren't as skilled. And he said, you know what that does? It helps both sets of athletes, because the athletes who are more skilled develop empathy for the ones who aren't and realize, like, wow, you know, not everyone picks up these skills as easily as I have. Not everyone is as good as I am, but wow, look at that person who's not nearly as good as me, and look how hard he or she is working. That's really inspiring to me. And then, of course, the kids who aren't as skilled can see the ones who are better and learn from them. And that piece of it really resonated with me, because being a walk-on at USC, I trained every day with world record holders and Olympic gold medalists, and I would venture to say, and I think they would agree, that I worked as hard, if not harder, than a lot of them. And so I hope that they were inspired by what I brought to the pool every day. And, of course, I was inspired by what they were able to do in the meets.
So, Karen, just about a minute left here. Who from Norwich is going to be in the coming Olympics, if anyone? And how do the Norwich Olympians handle life after all that training? Are they a little healthier in some respects than some of the other people you've met?
Well, I've done stories recently on athletes like Michael Phelps, who have you can't find an athlete who has been more successful in an Olympics. Literally, he is the winningest Olympian of all time, and he's dealt with terrible anxiety and depression. I'm finding in my research, in my reporting over the last 20 years, this has sadly become not an exception. And so I did find that the athletes of Norwich have had less difficulty with the anxiety and depression, they've been able to remake themselves, if you will, in their post-sports lives. And I think that is because the whole person was developed, that they were treated as people first, performers second. They were always seen as members of the community first and foremost, and not people that were of the community but elevated and exalted.
As human beings overall, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then who from Norwich is going to be in this Olympics?
Sadly, this is now the second Olympics since 1984 where no one from Norwich will be represented. There was a woman from the slopestyle skiing world, Julia Crass, who was in the final mix but did not make the team. So perhaps bad timing on my part, but since it's not really an Olympics book but a parenting guide, I think it'll work out okay.
True. It was headed for the sports section, ended up on the social science shelves instead. Norwich, One Tiny Vermont Town, Secret to Happiness and Excellence. A fun read and a fun chat. Karen, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.